Good morning. It is Sunday morning. It's a beautiful day here. And welcome to Money Matters. A ton to talk about that impacts you. And anywhere from the big macro environment, things are great from an earnings perspective. And as Louis C.K. said, everything's great, but nobody is happy. Or at least he said something like that. Today I want to talk about, typically, I love talking about the big picture, so the macro picture, and that's partially because I studied in economics. I probably liked the most macroeconomics, and still, if I were to have to be pegged down on one particular way that I look at the economy in the world, I would say macro, kind of macroeconomics is still a huge part of what I do and our team does, and I love it, one. But every so often, we will kind of zoom in instead of zooming out. And I think sometimes I do that just because it gives some of the examples you can give when you zoom in on a particular company or a particular sector, it really paints a much clearer picture of the broad perspective. And when we go through a market like we've been through in 2018, which is kind of a frustrating market, every time we get any sort of momentum, the steam kind of comes out of this market. Even when we get great news, and we've had phenomenal news over the last couple of weeks here, about, let's call it, a third of the S&P 500 has reported earnings already for the first quarter, and the results are just fantastic. I mean, earnings are growing 18% year over year from last year. Compare that to periods of time when we've had good earnings seasons that are 4 to 5% higher over the last year. Yes, tax reform is going into that number. Part of the reason companies have so much more net cash is because of tax reform, and that it gets kind of baked into the numbers. But when you have companies and their bottom lines, what they're taking home after taxes and everything is up almost 20% from the year prior, that's one of the strongest earnings seasons you will ever see in markets, period. Net profit margins, 11% higher than this time last year. That's the highest we've seen since before the Great Recession. So companies have just continued to beat earnings. There's tons of examples this week. Caterpillar, United Technologies, Verizon, 3M, Alphabet, Google's parent Alphabet, all anywhere from on the low end, they've been good, all the way to great. Yet prices, for the most part, have been negative. 3M down 10% for the week. Caterpillar down 5% for the week. Google down 4%. So even though you've seen these companies do as well or better than they've ever done, some of these are all-time highs for as far as profits are concerned. They're raising dividends. The market has said, look, we're still not satisfied. Now, S&P 500, to be fair, wasn't a terrible week. It was basically flat, down just a fraction of a percent. The Dow down about 0.6%. So no matter what is happening, markets are still saying, hey, just give me more. It's not good enough. Part of that can be tied back to interest rates going up. And we saw interest rates this week finally crack that 3% number on the 10-year Treasury. So that, to some extent, that's creating this short-term indigestion. Hey, wait a minute. If rates go up, that means the economy slows down. So maybe even though we've got these great earnings, maybe it means that we slow down from here because the market is forward-looking. It's out 6 months from here. Doesn't matter what had just happened. Doesn't matter that we're talking about quarter one in the rearview mirror. We worry about quarter three and quarter four for stocks. So you put all that together and there's still some uneasiness with markets. And I want to zoom in on a couple of areas today. One is a particular company that I think tells a really interesting story about what typically happens when companies fall, when their underlying business is still really, really healthy, but their stock price hasn't done well. And we're gonna talk about some of the metrics around Procter and Gamble today as a really good example. You zoom in on one company, how can you find some value in an otherwise market that doesn't seem to be rewarding the broad indices? And then I want to talk about the energy sector, which has had one of the largest disconnects that we have seen in 20 years, and what that potentially means for that sector of the economy and what that means for you, or what how you could potentially take advantage of that as an investor. So there's obviously a lot to talk about here today. Kind of, we could do a 5-hour Money Matters, but we only have two. We're live here in the studio this morning. The number 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. And then finally, in a world, well, and this is, I'm not going to do a big I told you so. But, you know, I'm very, very careful about talking about performance, and I'm never going to jump up and down and say, this is the best stock ever. You've got to invest this way. That's not our style here on Money Matters. Never has been, never will be. But it is my job to point out value. And, you know, I think about the most recent letter, and this is a totally separate topic, and I'm going totally off script here, because it kind of hit me this morning as I read something that we invest for a long period of time, and there has been this great attraction to just following an index. And that, for the most part, the reason why that works is because even though the index is good, and if you look at the S&P 500, the reason it is so good for most investors is that most investors are not great at investing. You might be a good saver, but when it comes to having your money invested and watching the gyrations of markets, stocks up, stocks down, bonds up, bonds down, that can be kind of emotionally painful. And that's why most investors don't ever even get close to the index, let alone even close to the 8 or 9% you've seen for the S&P 500, or 9.5% to 10% for the S&P 500 over time, because of the how difficult it is emotionally to kind of stay put. But I'm also reminded, when I look at Buffett's most recent letter, what he does every year is he tracks his performance, and this is all on one powerful page. He tracks what his fund has done every year, or Berkshire Hathaway's, it's a stock or a company, but it's really a holding company made up of a bunch of other stocks, if you will. So it's very much like a mutual fund, and he tracks the performance of the companies that he's bought or big positions of relative to the S&P 500. And it's all years, all the way back to 1965, are listed on this one very important sheet of paper. And you go down from year to year to year, you'll see that Buffett has years that are over 50%. There's a couple years where they're over 100% rate of return. And these are in the early years. And he'll be the first to tell you that the earlier years, when his fund or his company was much smaller, so the late 60s and through the 70s, it was such a small fund that he had the ability and the nimbleness to say, hey, I'm going to be pretty concentrated in a couple of these companies that I really think have a lot of upside. And that's how he's gotten these 50% plus years, in a couple cases over 100% in a given year. And if you track next to that line going down the page, you'll see the S&P 500. In some years, he did better than the S&P by a lot, some by a little, and sometimes the S&P outpaced Buffett. But over time, when you have something that is compounding even 1 or 2 or 3% better, the results can be dramatic. And I know we're in an age where the proverbial, the kind of the default has been, let's just buy the index. There is still something to be said for finding a strategy that really works over time, even if it's only 1 or 2 or 3% better than an international index or even a U.S. index. The results of that one page that shows what Buffett has done over time, because his compounding has been better than the market. You get down to the very bottom, you'll see the cumulative rate of return all the way back from 1965 until the end of last year in the S&P 500 has a cumulative rate of return, or internal rate of return, of over 15,000%, which is just a tremendous number. You look at the annual compounding number there, it's about 9.9%. Let's round that off to just a full 10. If you look at the column of Berkshire Hathaway, which is this one particular holding company in itself, because of the compounding effect, has been closer to 20% per year. So you've got basically 10% versus 20% over time per year. The difference, though, between the 15,000% for the S&P 500 and the cumulative gain having a 20% rate of return like Berkshire is astounding. And I actually have published this in an article or two, just because it's hard to even believe these numbers without looking at the page. But over time, Berkshire has compounded at 2.4 million percent over time. 2.4 million percent over that same exact period of time. It has turned people like Buffett and so many of his investors into not just wealthy people, but some of the very richest people on the planet. On the planet. So the steady drumbeat over the last several years of just throw it in the index and that's as good as you'll ever do, that's just not true. And we are a show of optimism, and we are a show of trying to find opportunity, which is very different. And I had a client of mine point this out this week, is that so much financial radio is there to scare you, because it's actually easier to scare you. It's easier to pick out the 5 or 10 things that are the worst about our economy and the world we live in and talk about that for 2 hours, scare the living daylights out of everybody listening, and then you say, hey, go buy an annuity because it's, quote, protected. That's a pretty easy strategy for somebody on the radio that's in finance to talk about. And that's why most of what you hear on financial radio, that's the gig. That's not the gig here. We're here to talk about optimism and opportunity, which can lead to real wealth, because investing can lead to real wealth. And that's exactly what we'll continue to do right here on Money Matters. So stay tuned. There's a lot to talk about here today. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. You can find me right here in the Atlanta area. Go to wesmoss.com. Those emails, upper right-hand corner, there's a envelope. Those emails come straight to me and our team. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. That's wesmoss.com. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here, WSB Radio. Your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Let's go to the phones, 404-872-0750. Dave joins us from Smyrna. Dave, what's going on? Good morning. How can I help?
Yes, Wes. Good morning to you. Here's my situation. I'm 66, soon to be 67 in 5 weeks. I'm presently employed with the federal government, and I hope to retire within 12 months. I have about $547,000 in my thrift savings plan, and of that, I have 63% in the G fund, 12% in the F fund, and the other 25 is in the CS and I fund. I'm considering transferring it to Vanguard.
Now, Dave, hang on just a second here, because I think you just talked code. You and I understand what you're talking about.
Yes.
But everybody else out there is thinking, wow, he's got some alphabet soup for his IRA or his 401k or TSP plan. So
right.
What those letters relate back to are the kind of investments you're in. Hang on, we've got to do a quick break. This is a perfect question for Money Matters. So hang on, Dave, from Smyrna. We'll get back to you as soon as we get back from break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters right here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. Welcome back to Money Matters. So much to cover, so little time. Before the break, we went to the phones and we talked to Dave from Smyrna. We're going to go back to Dave. Dave, you still hanging on?
Yes, I am.
All right, thanks. And I think this is a super important point, and that's why I wanted to carry you over into this segment. You are thinking you're approaching the non-working years, ready to kind of retire. And the reason I say kind of, there's often a gray period, the retirement gray zone for a lot of folks, where you don't fully retire and you ease into it, maybe with part-time work. But in your case, are you pretty much going to go right into fully stopping work? What's your plan?
My goal would be to work part-time.
Okay, so yeah, a little bit of a gray zone.
Yeah.
But
and
from
along
an
with that, yeah, possibly draw money from the annuity and hopefully avoid tapping into the thrift savings plan.
Let's talk about that plan for a minute. You mentioned a couple of letters, the G fund,
exactly,
the F fund, the C fund. Right now, let's go, how is it made up right now?
I have about 63% in the G fund, 12% in the F fund, and the other 25% in the C fund, the S fund, and the I fund.
And for our listeners, the TSP is remarkably simple or beautiful in its simplicity. There are five very different choices. Typically, they're very different. And it's CSI, not crime scene investigation, but common stock, small cap, and international. That's what CSI stands for. And they're indexes. And then GNF. G is for the government fixed income fund. And then F is for the general fixed income fund. Right now, the G and the F look a lot alike because the F over time has become mostly government bonds anyway, mostly treasuries. The G fund is all government bonds, but they're very, very close to one another. And of course, they're the super safe option. They're not going to move up a lot and they're not going to move down a lot. They are a step up the ladder of risk, let's say, from money market. You're going to get a tiny bit of interest, but at least they don't get crushed if the stock market goes down. And I presume you have a mix of 75% in these two to avoid oscillation, if you will, from the market. Is that
correct?
Right?
Correct.
And at what point have you done this calculation? As you are, and remind me again, you are 66?
Six, correct.
And you may work for a couple years part-time, but how much do you think over time, when you fully stop working, Dave, do you think you'll want to pull from that, let's call it a round number, that close to $600,000? In addition to Social Security, and by the way, do you have a pension too coming, or is it just Social Security for you?
It's a pension from the government. I came in after civil service, but I still get that FERS annuity. And that'll be around at least $1,400 or $1,500 a month.
Right. Okay. And FERS, again, there's more. This is jargon-free Sunday, Dave. But FERS, yes, for our other listeners, that's the Federal Employee Retirement System pension, right? Okay. So you've got a couple different pieces, which is really the way you want to do it. You'll have Social Security. You'll have FERS, which is really a pension. And then you'll have your assets to be able to draw from. Do you think you'll be using them, or is this money you may not really even need?
For the most part, I can probably live without it.
All right. And then I guess you're thinking about rolling this over, and I guess the question is how you reinvest it, right?
That's the other part of the dilemma, yes.
My question for you, and I'm part of what we've been talking about today, is compounding and the difference between just being a saver and really being an investor. And there's a massive difference between the two, right?
Right.
The saver is maybe good about putting money away. And sometimes that works. If you have a super, super, super high income, you can be a saver and kind of make your goals. And 99% of America is kind of just plugging away, putting money in, or a moderate amount of money in every quarter, every week, or every 2 weeks. And then you want it to grow, because there's a giant difference between making 2 or 3% a year versus making 6 or 7 or 8 or 9. And in the example I used earlier, and this is where you can find the example I talked about with Warren Buffett and his annual shareholder letter. I wrote this for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, so you can find this on AJC.com or myajc.com or at wesmoss.com under the title of the article is The New Verdict on the 4% Rule for Retirement. The new verdict on the 4% rule for retirement. And there I talk a little bit about Buffett's shareholder letter. And it really is, I have it in front of me here, and it just is a reminder. He started in 1965, and he tracks his performance year over year over year versus the S&P 500. And he has a couple really great years really early on when the fund was kind of small, or his company was kind of small on a relative basis. And then as time has gone on, his performance now is a little bit more like the S&P 500 because so many of his companies make up the S&P 500. But what's so important is that since he started in 65, the average annual rate of return for the Standard & Poor's 500 is 9.9%. And that's compounded over that whole period of time from 1964 to 1965 to 2017. At 9.9% on average per year. Berkshire has done 20.9%, so almost 21. And the difference between those two is just enormous. The S&P has been at 15,508% to be exact. And if you look at the per share market value of Berkshire stock over that same period of time is 2.4 million. Let me read the number, 2,404,748%. Basically 2.4 million percent. There's this just enormous difference if you can find a strategy or anything that compounds like that. And I think the reason I bring that up and I wanted to talk this through with you is that you can look at this a lot of different ways, but if you don't need the money and you're not worried about the risk, then I think you can potentially take on a little bit more risk. There's no reason to leave this in effectively the G fund, right, or the F fund. And at Vanguard, the equivalent would be, let's say, the short-term bond index. So they have an ETF. The symbol on this is BSV. BSV is just Vanguard's, and this is going into saying, hey, what should I reinvest it in? If you reinvested your Vanguard IRA, if you roll the TSP account into Vanguard and wanted it to be a similar format, 75% of your reinvestment would go into Vanguard's short-term bond index, which is going to, the yield on that today, let's see, I'm going to guess it's probably 1%, 1.5% BSV today. As I pull this up, the yield is 1.7%. And that's come up a bunch because short-term interest rates have gone higher because the Fed's been raising rates. The other side of this, Dave, is that you want to have some, in my opinion, some sort of component that grows with markets over time. And I would look at something like the Vanguard Dividend Appreciation Index, or ETF. The symbol on that is VIG. And that is similar to the market, S&P 500, but it has a slightly more focus on companies that are able to raise, and the operative word here is raise, the income that it pays out. And you can just reinvest if you don't need it, but you're going to see holdings like Johnson & Johnson and Microsoft and Pepsi and 3M and McDonald's and Medtronic and Union Pacific. They have some defense companies. Lockheed Martin has been able to do this. Nike, Costco, some utility companies like Next Era Energy, which is the old Florida Power and Light. Kind of think of Southern Company here in the U.S., but in Florida. So that's the kind of ETF that is market-oriented, market-based, with a dividend or income-leaning twist. I think the real question for you, though, is that what is that percentage? And if you're super, super risk-averse and you don't want to deal with any sort of market volatility, then sure, 20% in that, 80% in bonds is would be the way to do that. What you won't find, though, over the next 20 years is a whole lot of growth out of it. And that might be okay for you. But for somebody that doesn't necessarily need it, you don't rely on it, well, that also makes it so that you can deal potentially with a little bit more volatility, a little bit more up and down, so that over time, it grows and then you pass that on to somebody. And I don't know if you have kids or grandkids or somebody else that this would go to, maybe it's church or university, but this could really be an enormous amount of money. It's already a big amount, but a really enormous amount in 20 or 30 years if it's invested properly, or right, at least with a little bit of eye towards growth and compounding. So that would be my thought as you think this through, Dave. My thought would be, if you really don't need to rely on it, do you need to just leave it in short-term bonds that are paying 1% or 2%? And I think that might be an overly conservative position for somebody who doesn't rely on it.
Right. Two quick things. This is the Vanguard Index Appreciation
Fund. Well, on the stock side of the equation in this conversation, yeah, what I've talked about here is the Vanguard Dividend Appreciation Index ETF. There's actually just so as you look this through, yes, there's a mutual fund version of it and there's an ETF version of it. So there's two different chassis, if you will, two different baskets, but they're the same stocks in both baskets.
And you recommend the ETF?
It really depends. I will tend to use the ETF because I don't use Vanguard as my custodian. I use Charles Schwab and I use Fidelity. So that's where I custodian funds.
Got it.
And it's easier to buy the ETF if you're going to use some Vanguard products, if you will, or vehicles, than when your custodian is someone like Schwab or Fidelity. It's easier just to use their ETF. It's less expensive. You don't have to worry about lockups, if you will, on Vanguard funds, or the trading costs for the mutual funds are a little higher. Yeah. So that's why I tend to be using I tend to use the ETFs instead of the funds.
Right. And the other question that I have is, as far as transferring to Vanguard, should I wait for this correction to go through, or should I just, you know, be willing to lock in the losses that I've suffered in the past 2 months?
Well, remember, it depends. If you're going to continue to stay invested, the transfer period of time is somewhat de minimis. I mean, it might take a couple of days, but there's very few days it's not invested. It goes from being invested one place to being invested in another place within a day or two. So there's really no, it doesn't matter on when you reinvest it, particularly if you stay in the same kind of balance, because you're basically staying invested. It's all beneath, it goes from a 403b plan into a or TSP into an IRA, and it just stays invested. If you're going to change your allocation to have a little bit more towards the equity side, let's say you push that percentage up to 40 or 50%, then what you'd actually be doing is buying while markets have corrected close to 10%, which I think is that's the way you want to do it. And yes, it'd be great. It would be perfect timing if markets are going down 15 to wait till you get to 15, then you buy, then you increase your percentage in stocks. That's technically the best way to do it. Who knows exactly when and where this correction goes? We're hovering around 6 to 8% or 7 to 8%, depending on the index you look at. But if you're going to be in this for 10, 20, 30 years, Dave.
No, I won't be in it that long. No.
Well, hopefully, God willing, 20.
Yeah.
Whether it's down exactly 8 or 10 or 15 won't matter in the long run. The key is to get going. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We're going to get a quick break, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here, WSB Radio. Wes Moss here, the number 404-872-0750. In the 10 o'clock hour, we'll certainly go back to the phones. We're talking about the just dramatic difference between being a saver versus an investor, and why savers over time, or investors over time win just dramatically. There's a dramatic difference, and I don't think it gets a whole lot of press because they're not overly interesting. The reason I bring it up is that I've been reading Buffett's letter from 2018, and there's just such a stark difference on the first page, and one page shows that story. There's no better message than saying, okay, you do a little bit better than the market over a period of time. Markets since 1965 have grown wealth 15,500%. Buffett's fund over time, or his company, or his holding company, has grown at 2.4 million percent compounded over time. So if you're a saver, you go to the bank. Right now, interest rates are up. You can get 1 or 2% now on a CD, and that's great. And your money's totally, totally safe, and it'll sit there, and you'll get a tiny bit of interest. And for everybody, that there is at least a portion of what you have earned and saved, that's important. You want to have 6 months worth of emergency money. You want to have potentially 5% of your total net worth in just savings, so it's totally, totally safe, doesn't move. But if you're an investor, there's a huge difference there. We're going to talk about and Barron's did an article about the lobbying index. I've talked about this for 2 or 3 years now, but finally it's in Barron's, the exact individual, Dan Clifton, who runs this. I've had him here on the show. Now Barron's has published this and talked about the dramatic, dramatic rates of return on this thing relative to the general market over time. So I want to talk about that. More Money Matters straight ahead.